The Gemara in Tainus tells us that Abba Chilkia was a grandson of Chuni Hamagel. Abba Chilkia was a tremendous tzaddik, well known throughout Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara tells us that whenever the world needed rain, the Chachamim sent messengers to him. He would intercede, he would daven, and he was known as the rainmaker. He was the person that they turned to. In any case, the Gemara tells us that one time, in fact, they needed rain. It wasn't raining. So the Chachamim chose two Talmidei Chachamim and sent them as messengers to Abba Chilkia to ask him to daven for the Klal Yisrael. When these two Chachamim got to the house of Abba Chilkia, they saw that he wasn't there. They asked, "Where is he?" "He's out in the field." And they saw that he was out working in the field. They waited. And towards the end of the day, they noticed that his wife came out to greet him. His wife was bedecked, very, very fancy, wearing tachshitim, beautifully adorned. And together they walked back to their home. The Chachamim entered the house. And Abba Chilkia said, "Please sit down, have something to eat." He gave them something to eat. And while they were eating, he said to his wife, "Come with me." And he said to his wife, "I know why these Chachamim have come. They've come to ask me to daven for rain. Come, let you and I go to the roof. Let us daven. And they won't have to be machzik tova to us. They won't have to attribute the good to us. Let's daven privately. Let's daven in secret. And maybe Hashem will answer us." Gemara tells us they went up to the roof. She in her corner, he in his corner. And they davened. And within a short amount of time, the rain clouds began forming. And it was clear that it was going to rain. They came down, and they said to the Chachamim, "Tell us, why have you come?" And they said, "We've come to ask you to daven for us, that it should rain." Says Abba Chilkia, "Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hashem, that you didn't need Abba Chilkia, look, because it's going to rain without me." At which point the Chachamim said to him, "We know that it's going to rain because of you. We understand that, we appreciate that. But we have one question." And it wasn't one question they asked. Actually, the Gemara tells us they asked a number of questions. But one of the questions that they asked is, "We don't understand something. Why is it that when your wife came out to greet you, she came out so adorned, wearing tachshitin, wearing jewelry, and all dressed up? Why is that?" He said, "Kedei shelotein einei b'isha acheres. I do this, this is my minug, this is the way I do things, in order that I shouldn't place my eye on another woman. I should have eyes for my wife alone. She beautifies herself, so I should be attracted to her. I should look at her and not other women." And this is the Gemara. And I believe that this Gemara begs a following question. We're dealing with a tremendously holy Jew. We're dealing with a couple who are well, well above probably anyone in their generation. He is the rainmaker. The rainmaker means the entire existence of Eretz Yisrael, maybe humanity, is dependent on him. This is a time when, certainly in Eretz Yisrael, if there is no rain, there's a famine, there's widespread death. And no one can change that. Mass rallies don't help. Tehillim doesn't help. But this man alone has such entree into Hashem that he alone can change the decree. Clearly, he's a tzaddik of unimaginable proportions. And Rashi explains to us that his wife might well have been his equal, maybe even higher, because Rashi explains that when they were each davening on the roof in their corners, the clouds began forming by her side first as an indication that it was because of her tefillah that the rain clouds were coming. So here's the question. Why would this man need his wife to be all dolled up, come out to the field so he shouldn't look at other women? This man is a tzaddik. This man is kulo, kedusha, all purity and holiness. And more than that, why would he want to train his eye to look at his wife that way? Such a tzaddik, you'd imagine, A, he doesn't need this type of trick. Let him just not look. Let him just control himself. He's a man of tremendous self-will, self-control. And B, why is he training his eye to look at his wife that way? And I'd like to see if we could understand a little bit more clearly an element in a marriage and what this Gemara shares with us. And to do that, I think we have to focus on a few points that we touched on last time that need some more clarification. Men and women have different core needs. The last session we discussed the fact that men have a core need for respect. If a wife wants to have a successful marriage, she has to treat her husband with respect. Why? Because men need that. The male ego is different than the female ego. Men pride themselves on competence, on being put together, on being capable. And if a man feels that his wife doesn't respect him, if a man feels that his wife looks at him as a klutz and a whatever, a loser, it's destructive. And it'd be wise for a woman to think of her husband with almost a sunburn on his ego, because that is a certain reality. And if she's very careful about that, it makes it easier for him. And if she's not careful about that and she says disparaging remarks intentionally or not, or just treats him in a way that he feels dishonor, if she decides to fix him and make him better and improve upon him and just help him along, he receives that as dishonor, he receives that as barbs, and it makes being married very difficult. And that is a core need of a man, and a woman has to be wise to that. But as men have internal core needs, so too do women. And to focus on them, I'd like to focus on a very interesting mitzvah. The Torah tells us that when a man gets married, ki yikach ish isha chadasha, when a man gets married, he shouldn't go out to war. He shouldn't do any of the normal demands that civilian life puts upon him. Rather, for an entire year, v'simach es ishto asher lakach, he should make happy the wife that he took. And Rashi explains that the pasuk is to be read exactly as it says. He's not allowed to go to war. He's not allowed to even help out the troops. His obligation that entire year is to make happy his wife. V'simach es ishto. Now, this is a very interesting mitzvah. And you might wonder, why is it so important? Why is it so significant? I mean, happiness is nice. It's a wonderful thing to be happy. But if the Torah is concerned for shalom bayis, if the Torah is concerned for there being peace, let the Torah say, and work on your shalom bayis. Go to seminars, go to classes, learn the halachas, learn the sugya. What is happiness? And not just happiness, v'simach es ishto, make his wife happy. Why is that so core, so central? Why is that the focus of this? And I believe the answer to this is predicated on understanding what we discussed last time, and that is the Stipler's letter, in which he says a line that's so powerful. Says the Stipler that the very essence of a woman, the main hope of a woman in her world, is to have a husband who loves her. When she sees that this isn't so, it crushes her spirit and can be close to pikuach nefesh. Explains the Stipler that this is a core need in a woman. She has a very real, integral need to be cherished, to be appreciated, to be esteemed, and to be looked at with eyes that I'm the only one, I'm special to you. And when a woman's needs in that way are met, she's fulfilled, she's happy in the marriage. But if those needs aren't met, then she's not. Now, how do you show a woman that she is precious, that she's cherished? How do you show a woman that she is the number one? Well, I would imagine if you do things for her, you go out of the way to please her, you ask yourself, what could I do to make her happy? What's her way of doing things, and how could I do it? And I believe that's exactly pshat in this pasuk. The simach es ishto, make happy your wife. It doesn't mean make jolly. It doesn't mean you to be happy. The husband has an obligation to please his wife, to make her happy. Why would the Torah give him an obligation to do that? Because that's exactly the message that she needs. She needs to know that she's cherished. She needs to know that she's held in very high esteem. She needs to know that she is number one. And when he focuses his time, his energy, his efforts on this single question, what could I do to make her happy? What could I do to please her? What's her way of doing things? What's the way she likes to do it, and I'm going to do things that way? When a husband does that, The message that he delivers to his wife, as clear as day, is, you are precious, you are esteemed, you are cherished. And it meets a woman's core needs, meets her very internal requirements. And that's one of the needs that a woman has. She has a need to feel cherished, to feel loved, to feel unique in her husband's eyes. But there are other needs. And I'd like to focus on one of those other needs. Many yeshivas today, you'll see, do not have mirrors. If you go to many dorms in yeshivas, they won't have mirrors. Some do, some don't. I was in Chavetz Chaim yeshiva. In Chavetz Chaim, Yeshiva Zatzal had a masorah to stress godless Adam. So we had mirrors in the bathroom. But many, many dorms do not have mirrors in the bathroom. They don't want the guys to be that vain. They don't want the guys to be focused on that. So they specifically don't have mirrors. Now, whether you do hold of mirrors or don't hold of mirrors for guys, it's a matter of opinion. But if you tell me that there's a girl's dormitory that does not have mirrors on the wall, I would tell you, make sure that you do not send your daughter there. Why? Because within a young girl is an inborn need to be attractive. And if you send your daughter to a school that trains her against that inner need, they're going to damage her. They're going to hurt her essence. Because there is a need within a woman to be attractive, to be pretty. And any healthy, normal dorm, school, or environment encourages the girls to do exactly that. You don't have to get carried away, but certainly to groom, to be attractive. It's the nature of a woman, and she has to do it, because otherwise she's going to damage herself. And you may say to me, well, that's just a learned behavior. It's not an inner essence. It's not a core innate to her. And I'd like to share with you, it's not a learned behavior at all. Let me give you a good example. My youngest son had the interesting favor of having five mothers. You see, when he was born, he had my wife, who was his birth mother, but he also had four older sisters directly over him, and he effectively had five mothers, because to his sisters, this was the greatest present they could be ever given. I mean, this was a real live baby doll. And from the moment he was brought home from the hospital, that's exactly the way they treated him. They played with him. They dressed him up with bows, with ribbons. And it became an interesting sort of affair, because on a regular basis, they made him look like a girl. Now, his older brother is 13 years older than him. And the house at that point was mostly girls above him, and they had their way with him. And it was getting a little uncomfortable, because there he was on a regular basis with bows and ribbons and even dresses, until somebody brought him a toy truck. And then it was all over. At the age of two, someone brought him a toy truck. Gone were the bows, gone were the ribbons, gone were the dresses. He was a boy all the way through. You see, it was interesting, because there were no boys' toys in the house anymore. Because again, the next boy older than him was 13 years older. The toys were already out of the house. But once he was introduced to boys' toys, no longer did he have any interest whatsoever. And the reality is that at the most tender young age, boys and girls, as soon as they begin flourishing as individuals, the differences in gender become more and more prominent. And in fact, little girls are very, very concerned about the way they look, and little boys aren't. When a little girl prepares for a wedding, it's one of the most exciting times of the year for her. When my daughter was eight, she was getting all dolled up, and she said, "Boys, they're so dumb. They don't even know how good it feels to feel pretty." And she was exactly right. Little girls will spend hours in front of the mirror, making themselves up, doing the best they can, and looking pretty and feeling pretty is a very integral part of it. Boys don't do that. If you ever have a boy who bought a new suit and you ask him to show it, please show it to Tati. To get the kid to put the suit on is who knows what. Girls are only too glad to show off their new sweaters, their new skirts, because the nature of a man, nature of a woman is different, and is a very innate, inborn need of a young girl, and as she grows, an older girl, to be attractive. And this is another one of the needs that Hashem put into a woman. A woman in a marriage has a need to feel cherished, and a woman in a marriage has a need to feel that she's pretty, that she's attractive. And I'd like to ask you a question. Why do you think Hashem put that need into a woman? Why do you think it is that Hashem put this inner need to look attractive? And I'd like to share with you a very profound concept. The human being has many needs, and Hashem wants us to succeed. We have a need for nutrition. And if we did not eat appropriately, we would die. And everyone knows that, and everyone understands that. But Hashem didn't leave it at that. Hashem put delicious flavors into foods, and Hashem gave us a very real appetite. Why? Because Hashem knew that if He would just allow us to know that we need X amount of food for nutrition, so much carbohydrates, so much protein, so much fats, most of us would starve to death. But Hashem didn't want that to be. So Hashem put delicious flavors into food and gave us a very real appetite. And the reality is that we eat, maybe even more than we should, but we certainly don't starve to death. So too, the human has a need for sleep. If we would just run and run and run and run and never stop, we would die. But Hashem didn't just leave it as a fact. You need 8 hours sleep a night. Hashem made it that at a certain point we get exhausted, wiped out. Give me a bed. And when we do lie down, it feels very, very good. Because the reality is, if we didn't have those mechanisms, we would effectively die. And because Hashem is kindly merciful and Hashem wants the human race to continue, Hashem gave us various features to guarantee the success of our existence. And Hashem wants marriages to succeed. And there are many tools that are needed for a successful marriage. One of those tools is for a husband to be attracted to his wife. When a husband looks at his wife and she's matzah chen, she finds favor in his eyes, and she's attractive to him, that helps build the bond. But the problem was that it wasn't enough to just leave it. Hashem didn't just leave it as if she's pretty, she catches his eye, good and well. Hashem gave her an inner need to be attractive, an inner need to make herself pretty, an inner need to be in front of a husband and gain those appreciative looks. And as a result of that, she spends an inordinate amount of time fussing and primming and propping. And just look at a young girl when she's going out on a date. Look at a young kala. The amount of time in front of a mirror makes many chassanim dizzy. And sometimes a chassan misunderstands it. What kind of, what's she doing? So much time in front of the mirror. Come on. That's the nature of a woman. It's her teva. And the reason that Hashem made her that way is because it's an integral part of a marriage, and it's something that Hashem gave her a desire to do so that it should succeed. And sometimes women may even feel insecure about this. Sort of like, well, what if I'm not pretty enough? And in fact, let's make this question a little bit more potent. When a woman is 18, she looks very different than she does when she's 38. And she's going to look very different than those two numbers when she actually turns 58. And certainly when she turns 78, she's not going to look anything like she did when she was 18 years old. So here's the question. If a woman's beauty is a significant part of a man's being attracted and her finding favor in his eyes, well, what happens when a woman ages? She's no longer going to look as attractive. She's no longer going to be that pretty young kala that she was. So now the marriage just disintegrates. So Rashi, the Gemara in Sotah, tells us something so eye-opening. Chein isha al baila, the Gemara tells us, the favor of a woman is upon her husband. Explains Rashi, afilu hi mucha eris. Even if she's ugly, nosas chein be'enav, she finds favor in his eyes. And the Mashal explains that Hashem put this force into the human. If she is your bas zug, if she is your bashert, the one that's right for you, she will find favor in your eyes. You will look at her and she'll be beautiful to you. Objectively, says Rashi, she could be ugly. If you'd ask the average person, don't know. But if she's your bas zug, she'll find favor in your eyes, nosachein, because Hashem wants us to succeed. And understanding this is central to understanding one of the tools that Hashem gave us for a successful marriage. A man should look at his wife and she should be pleasing in his eyes, and that metzias will happen. Rashi says it's built into the nature of the world. It's the way Hashem runs the world. And it's an integral part of a successful marriage. Hence, the woman has a natural need for it, and the man will utilize it. And every once in a while, you'll hear a fellow say, that's true, but not for me. In fact, I got a phone call not long ago. I got a phone call from a young fellow. He says he's married not that long, and he has a shalom bias problem. Sure, what's happening? Well, I don't know how to say this, but I don't find my wife attractive. I don't find her attractive. And as soon as he said those words, something went off in my mind because it didn't make sense. There was something missing. So I probed and I probed and I probed a little more, and finally that something else came out. He was at that point spending about an hour a day on pornography sites. No kidding that he didn't find his wife attractive, because an hour a day he spent looking at things that was destroying who he was. But what Rashi's sharing with us is that provided that you don't mess up the system, provided you look where you're supposed to and don't look where you're not supposed to, there is a metzias that a woman will find favor in a husband's eyes. He'll look at her, she'll be favorable, and this is an important tool for success in marriage. And I believe that's the answer for Abba Chilkia. Do you know why it is that he asked his wife on a regular basis to get dressed up that way? Because when a man looks at his wife and she finds favor in his eyes, it doesn't detract from his ruchnius. Quite the opposite. Hashem gave that force to a woman, gave beauty to a woman. The main reason Hashem created that entire feature is that a husband should be pulled towards his wife. It's part of building the bond, part of building the attachment. And if you use it as it's supposed to, not only doesn't it ruin your ruchnius, it's a holy endeavor. If you're using it as a tool to get closer, to bond, to form more of an attachment, then it's kadosh, it's holy, it's proper. And even Abba Chilkia felt that he could use it to enhance the attachment, and that's why he did it. And I believe that there are a number of applications to this concept. The number one is probably the most obvious, that a wife should do her best to make herself attractive to her husband on a regular basis as much as she's able. Unfortunately, we typically put the mirrors on the wrong side of the of the door. Usually it's when a woman or a man goes outside, they make sure that their hair is proper and everything's ready because we're going out into the world. And the reality is that the mirror should be on the other side, because it's for your husband that you should look beautiful. And it's a what I call a no-brainer, that as much as she can, a woman should be attractive for her husband. And by the way, the opposite as well. A husband should maintain himself for his wife, because it's also an element of the success of marriage. There's another application of this that I think is also pretty obvious, and that is that a husband should notice it and make sure that he compliments his wife. If it's the nature of a woman to need to be cherished by her husband, if it's the nature of a woman to need to be attractive to her husband, then telling her that she has accomplished just that obviously is a chesed, obviously is something that's a kindliness that you'll do for your wife, obviously will make her feel good, and obviously will enhance the marriage. And I'd like to share with you that it's not always as easy as it seems. It was the late 80s when my wife, we were newly married, and fashions changed as fashions do, and women began wearing these dresses with large bows on the back. But I don't mean large bows. I mean huge bows. They looked like Mickey Mouse. Literally looked like from a costume store. Imagine a grown woman with this gigantic bow that extended beyond both sides of her on her back. And when these women started wearing it, I was like, oh, my goodness. Somebody has a creative idea over here. Well, lo and behold, the day came when my wife came back from the store and said, I just got a new dress. What do you think of it? And there it was, the giant Mickey Mouse bow on the back. Wow, I love it. It's wow, it's great. Wow. Now, Baruch Hashem, I had enough das at that point to say those words, but it could be that even that wasn't good enough. If you'd like to understand how to respond, just listen to women when a woman comes in. There's a group of three or four women standing around, and another woman comes in. The first thing they say, wow, great dress. Wow, I love it. Where'd you get it? Oh, it's so slenderizing. It goes so well. And just watch, by the way, what happens when a man walks in a room and a bunch of men are standing around. Hey, what's doing? Anything new? No comments about the tie or the suit or the shoes. But as a young chassan, you have to understand this is a big part of a woman's emotional needs. She needs to be cherished. She needs to be attractive to her husband. And obviously, noticing it is significant, number one, because it helps build the bond, the attachment, the love. And number two, noticing it is important because then you could say the words, you look beautiful, you look wonderful. And it's better to mean it if you can. Sometimes you're not going to be able to mean it, but say it anyway, because it's an important part of a successful marriage. But I have one more step that I think is very, very significant that I want to focus on. We mentioned the Rambam's formula, Chazal's formula for Shalom Bayis. It's a very simple formula. He has his part, she has hers. The role of the man is to mechabit his wife, to honor his wife more than himself, and to love his wife as he does himself. The job of the woman is to treat her husband with exceeding honor, as if he's a prince or maybe a king, is every beck and call to look at him almost with awe. Now, again, we explained why she should look at him that way, why she should treat him with excessive honor. Male ego, delicate, it's sensitive. It's a very good idea for Shalom Bayis. And as the Rambam says, Shuvasam na'a mushubach, their settling will be beautiful and praiseworthy if they each do this. But I have a question. There's something that's clearly missing in this equation. He should honor her and love her. She should honor him. Well, wait a minute. What happened to the love? Again, he should honor her more than himself and love her like he does himself, and she should honor him exceedingly. But the Rambam forgot an integral ingredient. There's no love mentioned. Nowhere does the Rambam say that she should love him. Now, isn't that strange? Could you imagine a loveless marriage? Could you imagine a marriage where a woman says, I just don't feel anything from him, just whatever. He's like any other person, I don't feel anything. Rahman al-Tzlan. If you had such a marriage, it would be disastrous. So the question is, why didn't the Rambam mention it? And I believe the answer to this is predicated on understanding the nature of a woman. You see, Hashem designed a woman to be an ezer kenegdo, to be a helpmate, to be a support. And women typically have an easier time doing what they should be doing than do men. I taught high school boys for 15 years, and I taught high school girls for about 3 months. I'd been teaching already for about 10 years, and there was a girls' school, there was a Chumash class that someone, there was an opening, they didn't, someone was sick, and they asked me if I could substitute for a short time. I said, fine. And the day I walked in, I just couldn't believe it. I opened the Chumash, I began speaking, and every girl in that room had the notebook open and pens writing. I spoke and they wrote. I spoke and they wrote. I spoke and they wrote. Sometimes I said, girls, put the pens down. Is anybody there? Anybody here? Now, I taught boys for 10 years. Never did I experience that type of behavior. With guys, you had better be alive. You better be lightning. You had to be, they'll either fall asleep or walk out or anything but sit there and take notes. And if you've ever run or spoken to someone who runs a boys' school and runs a girls' school, you know there's no comparison. Girls, by and large, are obedient. They're compliant. They do what they're supposed to do. And you tell a girl, these are the rules, and she keeps the rules. Tell a boy, these are the rules, and he does what he wants. The question is, how serious the punishment? Are you going to catch me or not? B'derech klal, women have a much easier time doing what they should be doing. Women are more developed in that way, and I'd like to share with you something very, very profound. when a woman's needs in the marriage are met, when she feels happy in the marriage, when her husband treats her with the honor due to her, and she feels cherished, there's a melting of her heart. There's a melting of her heart, and she wishes nothing other than bonding and attaching herself to her husband. You know why the Torah gave the mitzvah to the man, v'simach es ishto? Because men have a tough time forming attachments. Men have a tough time really getting into someone else's world and getting emotionally involved, but women don't. And if the man will make his wife happy, she'll have the one thing in the marriage that she needs, the sense of being treasured, the sense of being looked at as a special, unique person, and I'm number one. And if a wife feels that, it's almost automatic. Her heart will bond, will attach herself to her husband. They're made for each other anyway, and her heart is supple, and all he has to do is treat her with the sense that she's number one, that she's cherished, and in fact, it's natural and instinctive for a woman to love her husband. The reason why the Rambam didn't have to mention it is because it's a given. If you use the formula as it works, the husband still has to work at it. He still needs to look at his wife, and she has to find favor in his eyes. He needs more tools. He needs more work because men are less emotional. Men are less attached. Men don't form relationships as well. But to a woman, it's instinctive. It's natural, provided she's given what she needs. If she feels cherished, if she feels loved, then automatically she's going to respond. And in fact, she's going to love her husband. And this formula, by all rights, should be simple, should be easy. And I'd like to share with you that most Shalom Bayis problems start exactly at this point. Most of the time, the start point of the Shalom Bayis problems are when the wife does not feel cherished or loved. Either she feels criticized or condemned or not appreciated, or just that her feelings are negated, and she just doesn't have exactly that sense that she needs. And you see, if a guy doesn't have his emotional needs met in a marriage, whatever, he's fine. He's accustomed to living in a cave anyway. He doesn't need the relationship. And he could go on being roommates, being happy as a lark, and it really doesn't trouble him. But that's not true about a woman. A woman craves the relationship. A woman needs the relationship. And as a woman needs to feel attractive to her husband, a woman needs to feel treasured by her husband, a woman needs to feel that she's cherished, and she needs that relationship. And if she doesn't feel that sense, she's very unhappy, and it bothers her, and it eats at her, and it troubles her. And it comes out in different ways. One woman will kvetch, another woman will cry, another woman will get angry, but I guarantee if her needs are not met, she's going to be miserable and it's going to surface. And most of the time, the Shalom Bayis issues come up because a woman is not getting what she needs. She's not feeling cherished. She's not feeling loved. And sometimes it actually surfaces in almost a strange manner. For most women, the house represents them. They are the Akeres HaBayis, the pillar of the house. And typically, for a woman, the house, the way it looks, the way it presents, is her. And she takes great pride in her house, or the opposite, suffers great embarrassment if the house is a mess, because the house is her, and she is the house, and it represents her. Matter of fact, my Rebbe, the Reshiv Zatzal, many, many times I heard him say the words, guys, stay out of domestics. Men, don't be involved in pink colors or couch choices. If your wife asks you, fine, but it's her domain. Stay out of domestics. It's the woman's domain. It represents her. The choices are hers to make because it's her world. So imagine the following. Imagine you have a wife who, in fact, really feels very proud of her house and, in fact, loves her husband dearly. And one night she says to her husband, listen, I'm going to a shir tonight and I'm going to come back late. Please clean up the supper table. Please make sure the house looks neat because I'll be home late. And in fact, the husband says, sure, absolutely. She goes out and, well, he's a fine fellow, but not the neatest guy in the world. She comes back and the place is a mess. Not that he didn't try. He really did try, but he, you know, sort of half did try, half didn't try. And the place is a mess. And she walks in and she's embarrassed. Oh my goodness. In her inner mind, she's thinking, this house represents me, and it looks terrible. But worse than anything, in front of my husband, the one person who I most want to find favor in his eyes, the one person I most want to impress, my house that represents me is ugly in front of my husband, who matters so much to me. I feel so pained. I feel so embarrassed. I feel such pain because of this. Oh, and who caused this? Who caused this pain, this embarrassment, that my house that represents me is ugly in front of my husband? You know who causes? Him. He's the one. He's the one who caused this. And she lets loose, whoa. And it's very interesting. Because the reason why she felt embarrassed was because the house represented her, and it was in front of her husband, who she most wanted to find favor in her eyes, and in front of him, my house is ugly. And what did she do? She let out a tirade of words and statements, and whether it was just very, very hurtful or really, really nasty or whatever it may have been, what she just did was made herself as ugly as she possibly could be in his eyes. Because there's nothing more ugly to a husband than when a woman loses it and begins accusing him and calling him names, or even if she's more polite than that, but she starts doing things that are just not kefi who she is. And again, it's a very interesting phenomenon. The human being is extraordinarily complex. And when you take one human being from one world and take another human being from a different world, each with their own complexities, each with their own temperament, inclinations, and mix them together, you get some very, very complex, intricate weaves of behaviors. And oftentimes it is that a woman feels unloved and it has to be dealt with. But I want you to understand that it's the obligation of both partners to deal with that issue. Obviously, a husband has to do what he can to make her feel cherished and special and loved, and that she's number one, that her interests and what matters to her are key and central to him. And a wife often has to explain to her husband, not bishas maisa, not when she's angry, not when she's upset, but in a gentle tone of voice, she has to explain to her husband what it is that she needs. And there will also be times when a woman will find that her needs are not met. And that's when an Isha Chachma bin Sabaisa, a wise woman, builds her house and a foolish woman destroys it. Because if you recognize that your needs are not being met, deal with the issue. Don't react. Don't become a keg of dynamite that explodes, because what you're going to do is make yourself more ugly and destroy your Shalom Bayis. What you have to do is sometimes just be mevater, stop, and the next day, when things are calm, explain to your husband what you're feeling. Explain to your husband why this troubles you so. If you're dealing with two reasonable people, and that's almost always what we're dealing with, what you're dealing with is two people who don't understand each other. I have a little bit of a yetzahara, and every once in a while I'm just too tempted, I can't resist. One of the shmuz in Queens, there was a fellow who used to come on a regular basis. And as I was talking to him, I asked him what he does for a living, and he told me he's a divorce lawyer. And the words came out of my mouth. I just couldn't stop. I said, "So, do you enjoy your work?" He didn't quite appreciate how facetious I was, but he said to me the following. He said, "My work is extremely difficult. I deal with reasonable people in the worst moments of their life, and they're not people." And those words really left me with an interesting observation. Most of the time, certainly the people I deal with, and you'll talk to most of the Rabbanim, most marriage counselors, we're not dealing with creeps and bums. The guys aren't some evil, devious person, and the woman's not some witch who flies on a broom. Reasonable people. And most of the time, the problems come in is because they don't understand one another. Most of the time, the problems come in because she stabs him and she doesn't even know that she did it. He hurts her and he doesn't even know that he did. And no one communicates one to the other to explain to them in a calm, easygoing manner what's actually happening. And it is a wise woman who builds her house. If your needs are not being met, you have to ignore it then, and at a different time, in a calm time, when things are in a different mode, you sit down with your husband and you tell him you appreciate what he does for you. You love him so, what he does for you and the kids and whatever stage in life you're at. But there is one thing that I just feel would be even more helpful and would help me even more. And you explain what it is and why it bothers you. And hopefully he gets it. And if not, he'll ask. And if not, you'll explain. And at a certain point, he'll get it and you'll get it. And that is a major part of a successful marriage. Marriage is a learning process. The bond of love, of attachment, takes many, many years to build, and is a real learning curve involved, because each person is coming from a different world with gender differences, temperament differences, inclination differences, and putting them together in close proximity, there are going to be many mistakes, many things that one didn't realize, the other didn't realize, and it's something that requires very, very careful tiptoeing around, because each human being has a heart, and those hearts are so, so sensitive. And a husband has to convey that message. You're cherished, you're beloved. And if she's not getting it, she has to convey in a calm way what she needs. But there's one more step I think we have to focus on. On that Gemara that the Rambam quotes, that a man's obligation is to love his wife like himself, umechabda yosem megufo, and honor her more than himself, Rashi explains the why. Why is it that a husband has to honor his wife more than himself? The woman, I understand. The male has a delicate ego. If you treat him with dishonor, if you let him know that he's not competent, if you tell him in very clear words that he's not capable, that you don't trust him, guess what? His ego is going to be hurt, so don't do it. Don't give him advice. Don't correct him. Work with that ego. So I understand why a woman has to treat her husband with excessive covet. But why is it that a husband has to treat his wife with more covet than himself? It should be sufficient if he honors her as himself. Just like if he loves her like himself, that's great. So too if he treats her with the honor that he treats himself, that should be sufficient. And Rashi explains why it is that he has to treat her with more honor than himself. Does he lusa de isis akasha mid the gavra? Because the embarrassment to a woman is more severe than to a man. You see, women feel the pain more intensely. When you're embarrassed, a woman is far more embarrassed. When you show up late to the chasana and people say things, it's going to hurt your wife much more than you. When the house is a mess, it's going to hurt your wife much more than you. When things reflect on you as a couple or you as a family, your wife is going to feel the pain much more acutely than would you, and therefore your own sensitivity to your own covet is not sufficient, because your wife has greater requirements, she's more sensitive, and you have to treat her with more honor, because her heart is more feeling. And this is a certain reality that also requires tremendous, tremendous learning. Women are more emotional than men. But it's not just that they're more emotional, their emotions operate in a different way, and they put much more emphasis and importance on their emotions than do men. Men live in a very concrete world. Women live in a very emotional world. It's almost like men live in a black and white world and women live in a color world. The emotions that women feel are more intense, more vibrant, more regular. Why is it that when two seminary girls haven't seen each other in a week, they and they shriek and they hug? And why is it that when a woman is at a wedding, she cries, or at a funeral is broken down? So typically, the average guy will tell you, because the crybabies, I remember when we were kids, yeah, my sister, she's a crybaby. She just cries at anything. And that is utterly, completely false. She does not cry at everything. It's that she feels those emotions much more intensely than does a man. My girls are fond of the expression that guys don't have emotions. It's not true that guys don't have emotions, but it is true that by and large women feel the intensity, the flavors, the dimensions of those emotions more intensely than do men. The highs and the lows and the in-betweens. But it even goes further than that. because it's not just that women feel those emotions more intensely, they give them much more importance. When women talk about their emotions, those are important things. To most guys, if they're down or depressed, they just try to figure out how to get rid of that problem so that they can go on and be effective. If a guy's bothered by something, he tries to get rid of that emotion. To a woman, an emotion is something you have to deal with, you have to work on, you have to speak about, you have to be involved in. It's an important thing. To a guy, an emotion is something that gets in the way. To a woman, an emotion is something that's a real part of her world. And this difference between the way men and women feel and the way they deal with their emotions surfaces very, very often in many different ways in a marriage. And let's focus on one common example. Many, many guys try to explain to their wife that Nike is the way to go. Nike, just stop it. Just do it. Just stop it. Come on. Meaning to say as follows. She comes home and she's afraid and they're talking. And she's going on and finally says, come on, dear. We're not going broke. Come on. We have plenty of money. Stop it. Come on. Just come on. Just get it together. Or she'll say something like, the kids, please, dear, listen, the children are not the most impossible creatures that were ever created. Please, just come on. Just stop it. Honey, you know, you really have to stop exaggerating so much. You really just on and on and on. And even if you tell me he's a mensch and he doesn't use the Nike expression of just stop it, he's more a little bit more polite. He'll say it gently and kindly and with consideration. He'll explain to her why she shouldn't feel that way. And the reality is that what he's doing is a major mistake in a marriage because she feels that way. And saying she shouldn't feel that way isn't going to change her feelings. And no matter how often he says it, and no matter how right he is in his version of reality, she still feels it. And not only doesn't she take solace from his words, she takes angst, she takes umbrage, she gets insulted. Not only doesn't this creep feel my pain, he's telling me that my feelings aren't valid, as if I don't feel them, or I'm wrong for feeling them, or there's something wrong with me. What is his problem? And not only doesn't his gentle, kind way of explaining that she shouldn't feel this way help, it does the opposite. And both husband and wife have to be very cognizant of this, very aware of it, because the reality is it's not just fears, as if a woman standing on a chair screaming because they're a cockroach. It cuts across the full gamut of emotions, the highs and the lows and everything in between. Women feel those emotions much more, and that's much more a part of their reality. And a husband has to become sensitive to that, aware of that. A wife has to recognize that oftentimes the feelings are not appropriate. And she has to recognize oftentimes that she has to work on getting out from the rut. But at the same time, a husband has to recognize that that is the way my wife feels. And I think a mushal, I think that's very, very comparable to this, is something that the Chofetz Chaim writes about. The Chofetz Chaim says that oftentimes people look at rich people and they say, what kind of unworked out person. Look at it, he gets some money, comes rich, and he becomes a bald guy. I don't know what's with that guy. If I had money like he had money, I would never carry on like him. I would never show off and brag and buy the big fancy house and the fancy car. I would act just like I do now. Explains the Chofetz Chaim that that person who says that is making a fundamental mistake. He says, imagine that you're standing outside a bar and you see a guy walk out the door drunk. And in his drunken state, he falls to the ground and he rolls on the floor. And you say, oh my goodness, if I were drunk, I would never act like that. I'd have dignity. I'd have self-respect. I'd never fall on the floor and roll there like that. That's foolish to say. Why? Because right now you're sober and you don't feel drunk. But if you were drunk, you'd probably act just like he does. So too, says the Chofetz Chaim, when a man becomes wealthy, the gaiva, the covet, overwhelms him. And for you to sit here now and say, if I were rich, I'd never show off like him, is foolish. Because you're not wealthy, you don't feel those feelings, you're not living in the world that he's living, and you can never judge. You're like the sober guy saying, if I were drunk, I wouldn't roll on the floor. If you were drunk, you probably would roll on the floor. The reason you're not rolling on the floor is because you're not drunk now. And I say that's a very comparable concept to exactly what we're talking about here. a husband and wife have to understand that they have different emotional frequencies, they feel things differently, and they can't judge one the other based on their way of feeling, their approach. A husband has to be sensitive that his wife has feelings. Those feelings are legitimate and real. And to say to her, you shouldn't feel it, just stop feeling it, just stop it, is dismissive, it's inappropriate, it's not fair, and it's not true. Because when you have feelings, you can't just shut them off. Granted, you don't feel as often or maybe as intense, but when you do, you're not some master of the ship. But what you're doing is you're judging your wife with unfair systems of judgment, and you have to learn to be sensitive. And so too, a woman has to learn to recognize that not everything that she feels is correct, not everything that she feels is valid. They're valid feelings in a sense that she feels them, but she also has to be sensitive and has to educate her husband as to how she works, and she has to recognize that part of her job is to regulate those emotions and get to a different standpoint. And the area that this surfaces in, probably more than anything else, is at different cycles in a woman's time period. It's been said by physicians, and it's been said by people understand that a young man has to know that he's marrying three women. He's marrying a regular woman, and then he's marrying a woman during her menstrual time, and then he's marrying a woman when she's pregnant. Because the reality is that once a month, on a regular basis, a tremendous upheaval occurs to a woman's body. Physically, tremendous changes. The uterine lining is ripped down. The body prepares itself for the next cycle. But emotionally, there is upheaval and changes. And almost all women go through very different emotionality once a month. And depending on how severe and how long, it could be either traumatic to just troublesome. But the reality is, at that time of the month, your wife is going to feel differently than she does during the rest of the time. And what that means is, you as a husband have to be very aware of that. You have to be very focused on it. And you have to recognize the fact that your wife is going to feel things differently than she did. And you shouldn't be shocked to hear her say, oh, marriage is horrible and terrible, and I never feel happy, and I never feel sad. But dear, how come you always tell me how happy you are? They were just fooling you, and I was just covering up, and now I really feel miserable. But dear, you've always said how happy you are, and you wrote me those love notes. I was just fooling myself, but now I'm real. And this will go on and on and on. And again, each human being is distinct, and each human being has their own way that it surfaces, but women will be extraordinarily emotional. And a man has to recognize that and understand it, and a woman has to recognize that and understand it. Unfortunately, I have had many discussions with women during postpartum when it's almost impossible to speak to them. You know, if the menstrual cycle once a month is a problem, when a woman has a child, there's even bigger hormonal changes. And after she gives birth, there's a typical postpartum depression. And many, many women go through a very severe, very difficult time. Now, at certain points, it is wise and appropriate for a woman to seek professional help, often under certain circumstances, even medication. And I've been involved in many situations where it is a dramatic reversal, where a woman will be depressed because she's chemically imbalanced. It's just part of the process. And the right medication, boom, removes it and lifts it, and she's happy again. Again, it has to be the right situation, the right circumstances, but when it's appropriate, it's absolutely a necessity, and it's a wise couple that will seek it out. But regardless, there's a point once a month during pregnancy, after, when a woman is far more emotional. And oftentimes, it's a difficult time in the marriage, because it's a very different relationship then. Typically, it's a time when husband and wife can't touch. And it's a very, very delicate balance because there's Kirov Das and Kirov Das that brings Tegila Erva. During the time when a woman is in Nida, husband and wife have to be very guarded not to come to any contact, not to come to any sort of behaviors that would lead them to contact. But at the same time, they have to show tremendous regard for one another. They have to keep the bond of love flourishing. They have to show love and have to demonstrate. And the Achronim distinguish between Kiruv Das, the words or expressions that bring them closer, and then Kiruv Das that brings to Gili Erva, that brings to potential contact. If it could lead to contact, obviously it's inappropriate, but there has to be Kiruv Das, there has to be a closeness, there has to be a togetherness, there has to be concern, and a husband has to be very, very guarded and careful with what he says, far more guarded than he is the rest of the year, the rest of the time. And he has to show her deep concern, deep consideration, and he has to recognize that much of what she's saying isn't her, and much of what she's saying now will change, and a woman has to recognize that also. And I think there's a mushel that may help, because it's a difficult state for both sides to focus on clearly. Imagine you have a fellow who's paranoid. You have a guy who's paranoid. What do you say to him? Listen, don't be paranoid, guy. Come on. No one's out to kill you. No one's out to get you. You'll never win. Why? But look, that guy, you see that? Do you see the policeman? Why was his hand on the gun right when he was walking by me? And the mailman, huh? Come on. Why was his hand by the mace, huh? Why? You see, the fellow who's paranoid doesn't feel that the world's out to get him. He knows it. It's a reality. Based on the way he feels, he knows the world is out to get him. And the only way you can help him is if you could change his reality. If you could explain to him that you feel it. I'm not denying that you feel it. But feeling something doesn't make it real. And I think that's an important point for both husband and wife to focus on. A husband has to be very sensitive and recognize that his wife is going through things. And at the same time, a woman has to recognize that these are feelings. But not everything that I feel is real. Right now I feel down. Right now I feel depressed. But it'll lighten. It'll change. And recognizing that those feelings are valid, but they will change, is a part of a successful marriage and part of the learning curve. I think this Gemara is sharing with us a tremendous, tremendous concept. As holy a man as Abba Chilkia used this technique, used this method to help build the attachment, he asked his wife to get dressed up for him so that he should have eyes for her and her alone, because attraction is an important part in the success of a marriage. Hashem gave a woman a need to be cherished and gave her a need to feel attractive. The reason why Hashem gave her that need is because that's an important part of the marriage. And if she feels that she needs to be attractive, she'll doll herself up, she'll make herself up, she'll make herself look attractive, and she'll catch her husband's eye. Provided her husband does what he should, she'll find favor in his eyes. As Rashi says, even if objectively she's not attractive, even if objectively she's ugly, Hashem puts within the heart of a man a certain favor. He finds his wife attractive. She finds favor in his eyes. A woman has a need to make herself attractive. A man needs that to help the bond. A woman also needs it, and it's important for a husband to make himself attractive as well. But a woman has to recognize more than anything else that the main attractiveness of her is who she is as a person. And if she acts in a way, for whatever the cause, if she acts in a way that's ugly or biting or difficult, she's making herself ugly. And many, many a time, it starts with the fact that a woman doesn't feel cherished. And as a stipler says, that's what she needs. The reason why a man is a mitzvah to be simach as ishto, to make his wife happy, is because a man has to make her happy, because that's what shows her that she's cherished. Once she knows that she's cherished, once she knows, she automatically feels that love. That's a given. And many, many times the Shalom Bayis issues start because a woman doesn't feel cherished. And it's a husband's obligation to rectify that. And it's a husband's obligation not to criticize, not to critique. In future sessions, we'll spend more time on that. It's a husband's obligation to compliment and be supportive, to be there, to let his wife know that she's number one. And if a wife isn't feeling that, she has to be a wise woman. Don't destroy your house. Don't, in your anger and your temper, say things that are destructive, because your arrows will shoot into his heart. He'll shoot back into you, and you'll be fighting back and forth, cats and dogs. If you're feeling hurt, deal with it. Deal with it typically means at a different time you explain to your husband your needs. You work on it. Sometimes you have to overlook. but recognizing that regardless, each partner is going to be learning and growing, and there will be things that are done inappropriately. That's part of the game. Understanding his needs, understanding her needs, and being alert to them is one of the keys for a successful marriage. Hashem gave us all of the tools. We have to use them. And I want to close with one last thought. Rabbi Ari Levin was known as a tzaddik in our time, a tremendous, tremendous Baal Midos. His love for every Jew, his compassion was just unbridled. And he had a wife who was his equal. Way, way behind the scenes, a very, very tzanua woman, but a tremendous Baalas Chesed. A number of years after she passed away, Rabbi Ari Levin, one Purim, was sitting with a picture of his wife looking at it. And someone who knew Rabbi Ari Levin very well went over and said, "Why is the Rav making himself depressed? It's Purim, we're supposed to be happy." Rabbi Ari Levin said to this person, "Since she's passed away, the more time that passes, the less I can remember what she looks like. But the more time that passes, the more clearly I remember Hamidos Tovos, Maasim Tovim, how good she was, how kind she was. I took out this picture because I wanted to be happy. I take out this picture and I remember who she was. And I remember who this person was." And that is such a powerful message. Because the beauty of a woman is her Maasim Tovim. The beauty of a man is his Midos. The other parts are tools. And if each partner focuses on the other's needs, if he focuses on how could I please her, how could I learn her ways and do things for her, and if she focuses on his needs and what could I do to meet his needs, you have a dwelling that's meshubach unnoah. May Hashem grant us the wisdom and understanding to put this into practice.